You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to episode 60 of the Social Media and Politics podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen. Connect with us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast or swing by our website, socialmediaandpolitics.org. All right, y'all. Thanks so much for tuning in. I saw we had quite a bump in listeners in September with 300 new people tuning into the pod. So if you're new, welcome and tell a friend, tell a colleague, let them know what we're doing here. Today, we're going to be diving right into one of the hottest topics going on both in society and in academia, and that is political polarization and how social media use might affect political polarization. And you may have seen recently in the media talk about the American public being more polarized or more radicalized, is even the word being thrown around today. And one of the premier organizations that's been shedding light on the political polarization phenomenon is Pew Research Center. And today I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Galen Stocking, who is a computational social scientist at Pew Research Center and also a listener of the pod. So Dr. Stocking and I met at the American Political Science Association, sort of big political science conference, recently in Boston. And since I was going to be in D.C. in a few weeks, I decided to hit him up and sit down at Pew Research Center and discuss the work that Pew's been doing around political polarization, but also current trends in social media news use among Americans. And because Dr. Stocking is a computational social scientist, looking at how computational methods can be used alongside or in tandem with survey research to answer some of society's pressing questions. And because I recorded the interview on a field recorder sort of outside of a studio, it's not studio grade. It goes a little bit up and down in terms of the pitch and volume, but stick with it. It's a great interview. And without further ado, let me introduce Dr. Galen Stocking, computational social scientist at Pew Research Center.
Dr. Stocking, thanks so much for taking the time out and welcome to the Social Media and Politics podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's really great. And I'm really excited to talk about all this today.
Yeah. And polarization, which I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on it because it's so much of a buzzword these days. So I'd like to ask, how does Pew Research Center define or understand polarization? And how does the center go about measuring polarization empirically?
So polarization is actually a very complex topic. And so we have a couple of different approaches that we use. So I'm on the journalism team. So most of my research and most research that my colleagues do is focused on media attitudes, media consumption, and the general state of the news media itself. And then there's other teams, politics, religion, several other teams that focus on questions about opinions toward politics, religion, those kinds of things. So I'll talk a little bit about how they deal with polarization and how we deal with polarization, because they're intertwined, but there are subtle differences. So when we talk about polarization, we're mostly talking about political polarization. We're talking about how people's ideologies have shifted over time to become more in line with their party identification. So if you look back in, and there's a great report that came out in 2017 that shows this graphically. So I urge your listeners to go back and take a look at that.
I'll link to it in the show notes.
Great, great. But it shows that in 1994, the median Democrat and the median Republican were fairly close in terms of their ideology. And over time, this has shifted where Democrats have become more liberal and Republicans have become more conservative. And they have done so in a way that means that the median has shifted and the amount that are closer to the ends of that spectrum has grown. Whereas people used to have more mixed views, there are fewer people that have more mixed ideological views and more people are more stable across their attitudes. So that's one way of looking at polarization. That's looking at ideological polarization. But polarization actually takes a lot of forms. You can measure polarization by looking at how people's attitudes towards objects and people and, you know, the news media or anything else differ by party. So that's a lot of what we do. We often will look at Democrats or Democratic leaners and members that are Republican or Republican leaners and see how their media consumption patterns are different. And so that's also polarization when there are large differences between them, but it's not ideological polarization. So those two different ways of looking at it are, you know, kind of subtle differences, but they're important to keep in mind as you look into this topic.
Yeah, and you were mentioning like the religion team and all these different teams. I mean, can there be a polarization of basically anything, or is it particularly about politics? Because that's the context we generally think of it.
Right. Polarization could be about anything. You could have a difference between members of the Catholic Church that are Democrats and members of the Catholic Church that are Republican. They have different views on the Pope. There's a study we released this week on that. Or you could actually have differences within different religions where, you know, some members of a religion think one way, some members of a religion think another way. And really, polarization is just about anything. But when we are talking about the political sphere, we're really talking about these different kinds of political polarization and how people's party identification or their ideology actually really affects their views.
Interesting. So you're interested in journalism. That's a lot of what your work is on. Pew Research Center released a study in 2014 looking at polarization and media habits. And so I want to ask you as an expert, what's the connection there between polarization and media?
So that's something that we're still exploring. That's something that I don't think that anyone has a solid, this is what it is kind of answer, which is great because that means that there's a lot of research that can still be conducted and a lot of fertile ground for this kind of exploration. So in 2014, this study that you talked about, we looked at the media sources and the trust of different groups based on their ideology. So we looked at those who were, mostly we looked at those who were consistent conservatives, which means when they answer a set of questions about their ideological leanings, they all kind of group around the conservative preference, and consistent liberals were the opposite. And we found a few interesting things. We found that on the consistent conservative side, they tend to be clustered around one news source. So about half of that group found that Fox News was their main source for news. Mm. But that's not the case on the other side. So consistent liberals use a variety of sources, and there's not that one centralizing source for news. Consistent conservatives are also more distrustful of more sources, and consistent liberals are more trusting of more sources. So about two-thirds of sources in the list that we had, consistent conservatives said that they distrusted them. And I think it was about the reverse for consistent liberals.
Mm. And so in talking about Fox News on one side, and I guess the sort of liberal equivalent is MSNBC that's kind of thrown around. What about social media? And I know that Pew Research Center has done some work on how Americans use social media for news use. I personally love these reports. I tweet about them all the time.
Great, thank you.
And so what are some of the key trends you're seeing in terms of social media news use, and how might that relate to polarization?
Well, it's really interesting to think about social media over time, because if you were to look 10 years ago, no one would think that people would be using social media for news, right? It was a place that you went to talk about your what you had for lunch and like tweet a picture of it or share a picture or something. But that's really changed, and the social media platforms themselves have really matured to the point that usage has plateaued in the US. Up until the last few years, there's been steady growth in the amount of people who have used social media platforms. And we've seen the last couple of years that this has plateaued. About 70% of Americans use social media for any use. So as these platforms have matured, they've become a source for news for many Americans. So what we do is we ask people if they use a source, you know, we go through the list of sources, and if they do use that source, if they use it for news. So about two-thirds of Americans now get news on social media in some way, which means that, you know, most Americans who use social media use it for news in some capacity. And when we say news, we're talking about events that occur outside of your friends and family. Mm. So it's anything outside of your sphere. So that could be local news, that could be international news, could be national news, could be politics, anything along those lines. But what we saw when we last measured it earlier this year was not that much different from 2017, and also only slightly changed from 2016. So these platforms are seen as a source for news for many people, and this is consistent. It's not changing. It's not getting new people to come to them for news. But there are differences in which sites people use for news more. So Facebook is by far the largest site. More people use Facebook in general. But the proportion that use Facebook for news is actually smaller than it is for other sites. So Reddit actually has the highest proportion of news users among its users. So only about 5% of the public actually uses Reddit. I know if you were to ask my mom what Reddit is, she would have no idea what it is. but she'd know what Facebook is. And what's interesting about that is that Reddit is, for whatever reason, has developed into, for its users, a source for news. Twitter is much the same. So about 73% of Reddit users use it for news, and about 71% of Twitter users use it for news. Now, Twitter ends up having a larger impact because the proportion of the public that uses Twitter in general is higher. So only about 5% of the public uses Reddit, and about 12% use Twitter. Facebook is not much lower, but the difference is we're talking about 2/3 of Facebook users use it for news. But stepping back a minute from who's using it and the news use of it, people are also very concerned about it. So in a study we released this past summer, about 57% of social media news users actually expect the news that they're going to be getting there to be largely inaccurate. Mm. So even though they're going to use it, they think it's going to be largely inaccurate. And we see a difference here between Republicans and Democrats, where Republicans are more likely to say that the news on social media is going to be inaccurate. So 72% of Republicans think it'll be inaccurate, and 46% of Democrats think it'll be inaccurate. And even further, only about half of those news users think it helps them understand current news events. So 48% think it's actually helps give them some kind of clarity around news events, and slightly more Republicans than Democrats think so. So there's not as much of a partisan gap there. And we're not necessarily certain why that is, but that's an interesting look at how people are internalizing this news that they get there.
Mm. And so I want to kind of pick your brain a little bit about some of these issues, because this is, I think, one of the sort of most important issues going on in the U.S. today. And one has to do with this idea of news. So you talked about how you define news. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, because I would like to know how many Americans are getting political news from the platforms. What's the kind of, I guess, thought process behind just asking kind of news in general? Does that relate to survey questions? It's easier for people to just think about news versus self-reporting political news or sports news or something like that. So what's the idea behind looking at news as one genre and sort of not breaking it down into different categories?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually, I wasn't here when we came up with that definition. I've been here for about 3 years. But my understanding of it, and just my understanding of survey research in general, is that a lot of people may not necessarily be able to distinguish between political news and other kinds of news. And so it's all kind of news to them. And so we want to make sure that we're capturing as much of that as possible and don't want to leave people out just because they don't really differentiate between those categories.
Yeah. And I think even because I'm thinking about this, and we've brought it up a couple of times on the podcast, is what makes a political ad a political ad? It's very difficult. So I think it's also the same with news.
Right. And Facebook is struggling with that as well. I mean, there's been that issue that they've had with categorizing news media organizations as having political ads when they're just promoting their news stories.
Exactly.
And there's been a lot of pushback against that. Maybe some of them are political ads, depending upon the news source, and some of them aren't. And you know, that organization, Facebook, is really having a hard time trying to figure out where that line is.
Yeah. And then I wanted to follow up on the different platforms where people are getting news.
Sure.
And especially Reddit, because we haven't talked about it so much on the podcast, but it's something that you wrote a report about yourself. What is it about Reddit that makes it such a source for news? Do you think it has to do with the platform's design or the people who are using it or kind of its original purpose? I mean, what do you think? What's going on with Reddit?
Well, I don't have any definitive data on that, unfortunately. But as someone who has used Reddit in the past, I think that there are probably many different elements that make it attractive to people to use for news. A lot of this is kind of snowball effects that once some people start to post news stories, then other people do. It also doesn't have some of the same kinds of network effects, or the network effects are different than they are for Twitter or Facebook, where you have lists of people you follow or friends that you are have mutual connections with. With Reddit, you don't necessarily have any connections with anyone else, but you're all using the same platforms. So something that's posted may spread beyond the people that you know or the people that you have interest in following or who have interest in following you. So I'm not entirely certain why. There are certainly forums that are subreddits, since it's basically just a forum, that are set up for news, that their whole entire purpose is news. And as far as I know, I believe the original design of Reddit placed those subreddits in the main feed that everyone got. So that probably also contributed to it. But it's really hard to tell without doing a lot of archaeological digging into the site, which would be really interesting to do.
Yeah, and there's actually not so much research being done on Reddit, even though that platform, I think all the data is public. Someone has sort of archived it and put it online.
Yeah, and we actually used that that data for our study, and it was really rich. There have been some holes that some other researchers have found, and they've been filled in as far as I know. So yeah, it's a good source, and I encourage people to use it. When we were working on this for our study, we were looking at basically how much attention each of the presidential candidates were getting during the primaries in 2016. And that data was really easy to process and work with because of that. And we ended up building some support vector machines to try to determine if a comment was about that candidate or not.
Support vector machines. Now we're getting into the computational stuff.
Not to cue you for that.
But one of the reasons that I'm excited to talk to you is we're both working with the sort of computational methods. And so I want to get into the kind of back end in terms of what Pew Research Center does. And,
sure.
And one thing I'm really curious about is how do you actually decide what to study? What is the sort of process, decision-making process, I guess, behind what topics you're going to look at? Because Pew Research Center has such a massive effect, I think, both on academia and society. I mean, the studies that you're doing are really kind of the definitive ones, right? So how do you decide what to come up with to study?
Well, we actually have a pretty open and collaborative process for determining what to study. So we kind of plan out each year what we think we're going to want to look at for that year. And, you know, each team will propose a few ideas and it goes through a whole process and some get approved, some don't. Kind of like a grant writing process, not too dissimilar from that, but in a much more contained environment. So we have some things that we have planned out every year. We have some projects like, okay, this is the project we're going to be doing these months. This is the project we're going to be doing these months. But we always leave some space in for answering questions that pop up throughout the year. So some of my work has actually been like that. So I did a study looking at shares to news organizations about immigration on Twitter.
I'll link to that one in the show notes as well.
Great.
It's a good one.
And that was actually something that we weren't planning on doing. And we just saw this happening and thought it was a really interesting question and started to dig into it. So it's actually pretty fluid while having like a stable project plan overall.
Right. And I think, was it 2014, the same year as this polarization in media habits, where I think in the sort of beginning of the report, it was like polarization, I think, was one of those key topics. And it's interesting that was 2014, and now it's such a big buzzword today. Do you think there's a connection there?
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to speak to any effect that we may or may not have had. But I think that it's more to the point that academics and journalists and elites and the public is recognizing that polarization is occurring and, you know, growing stronger. And, you know, we recognize it then and it's just out there now. And
yeah,
so this is the thing that everyone's talking about. But we often have like an organizing theme to the kind of research that we're doing. So at that point in time, that was actually before I started here, but in that point in time, polarization was a unifying idea that we're trying to do research on from several different angles. And we still have research that, you know, touches on gaps between members of different parties. Right now, our theme, or the theme for 2018, is on trust, facts, and democracy, and how those are intertwined and what's important about them.
Trust, facts, and democracy. What's a trust fact?
Well, trust, comma, facts, and democracy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
So, for instance, we did a study where we asked people, we gave people a list of 10 statements, and we asked them that were newsy kinds of statements. And we asked them which ones were factual statements and which ones were opinion statements, because we wanted to get at this idea of, can people distinguish between, when they see a bunch of news, can they distinguish between what are facts and what are presented as opinions? And overall, people did pretty well, but there were many people who did not could not actually distinguish that. And again, there was a partisan gap there too, where people tended to recognize statements as factual if they favored their side.
This kind of confirmation bias type of
Yeah, we didn't look too much at what kinds of psychological processes are doing that, but that is likely to be one of them that's behind that. Yeah.
So let me ask you what I'm most curious about, which is so Pew Research Center is known for its sort of public opinion polling, right? And this is kind of the gold standard of methodologies, particularly in political science. But you're a computational social science. So what type of work do you do at the center, and how does that complement traditional public opinion polling?
So that's a great question. I think about this from where I came as a researcher and my background when I'm looking at my role here. And I remember some of my comparative politics classes, and we had this whole course that was all about, should you use quantitative measures or methods or qualitative methods? Should you do surveys and all those kinds of methods, or should you get down the weeds and do ethnographic or participant observation kinds of methods? And I remember thinking all through this class, why? I mean, sometimes you want to use both. Like, sometimes you want to use one measure, sometimes you want to use another. It really depends on what you're asking. And I think we take that same kind of approach. We want to use the tool that's best to answer the research question that we have. And sometimes that's a survey. And we want to get to the attitudes of the public. Surveys are really great at that. We have a lot of knowledge about how to do that, not just Pew, but in general, the academic community has a lot of knowledge about how to design surveys and administer them and all that. And so we know what we're getting when we're going out into the field and getting a survey. Sometimes, though, you want to get a little bit beyond that. You want to look at behavioral data. You want to see if that is different. So you can look at things like social media data. You can look at web traffic or other kinds of data, and get a sense of how people are actually behaving despite what they say. So there may be differences between what they say and what they do. And in fact, when we look at behavioral data, it's maybe not necessarily reflecting of their attitudes. So for instance, if you are posting a link about immigration because it's a hot topic, it could be that you are really interested in immigration, but it doesn't really necessarily reflect what your attitudes are about immigration.
So, retweet, not endorsement type.
Right, exactly. So we recognize that these are different kinds of data and they answer different kinds of research questions. So we try to bring the right tool to answer that. And sometimes that's actually in the same study, mixing different methods. So for the Reddit study, we actually used a survey and then we used SVMs to try to get down and figure out, what do Reddit users think about the presidential candidates at the time? And what are they posting about them? And looking at the differences between those research questions. We also did a study on Flint where we used Google search data.
The Flint water crisis.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Where we looked at Google search data, Twitter data, and then did a content analysis of newspaper articles. And we've actually used content analysis a lot here. It's been a well-worn tool in our toolbox. So we really just try to bring whatever tool is best at that time.
And so let's say you're working with Twitter data, which you have. What type of data are you using? Are you actually buying it from the platform or are you pulling it from the API? I mean, I would assume that maybe there's more resources at Pew Research Center than some of us are used to working with.
Well, it really depends. So sometimes we want to just get the sample. We don't need to speak to everything that's out there. So for the Twitter immigration study, which is called Sources Shared on Twitter, we actually use Twitter data, the full fire hose data, because we were interested in digging deep into determining which sites people are sharing, so which news sites especially people are sharing about that topic. But for other topics, we don't necessarily need that full fire hose, because it can get pretty expensive pretty quickly, as I'm sure you're aware. So for a study on bots that another team here released last year, or maybe it was earlier this year, they actually just used the Twitter API and the 1% sample. And we just had a stream collecting data for a few weeks and then analyzed that data after it came in.
Interesting. Because I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here.
Sure.
And it's about, or this question is about the accuracy of polling, right? Especially with the latest U.S. general election. I mean, no one sort of predicted Donald Trump or Brexit. These are the kind of classic examples that are maybe thrown around a bit too much. So, I mean, how do you see that? The difference between, or maybe the synergies between polling and some of the other types of data we can get out there? Because I think you're right, like, let's use whatever methods are appropriate. So how do you see polling in terms of measuring public opinion, predicting elections with other types of data, especially from these social media platforms where there's so much of that data?
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. Definitely.
So as I'm sure you're aware, survey methods have taken a hit in recent years because of things like the 2016 election or Brexit. But part of it is the surveys generally weren't that off in those instances. And part of it is also that surveys have been struggling with the rise of cell phones and falling response rates and all of those kinds of issues. We still are confident in our polling. We take a number of steps to ensure accuracy, to make sure that we're representative of the population, and all that kind of work that is really, really important to ensuring that what we're putting out is as accurate as it possibly can be. And I feel like, really when you can bring in social media data to complement that, it's great. But we have to remember with social media data that it's not representative of the public. Not everyone is using Twitter, as we know, it's only about 12% of the public. And not everyone is actually even sharing links or anything like that on Twitter. So when we say, as we do in this study, and we talk about this in the Sources Shared on Twitter study, that this is not representative of where the public is getting their news from or what their views are or attitudes or anything like that. It's representative of what those accounts did. Mm. That's really it. So you have to be very careful with social media data that you're not overstating what it means, which is easy to do and easy to just think through as you're working with any of these kinds of data. So when we try to marry these to any kind of data sets that are from different sources, we think about what they mean and who they're talking about and be very clear about those kinds of differences.
Mm. And I don't know if you're sort of authorized to talk about it or not, but I'm thinking of your presentation at APSA, or the American Political Science Association, where it was hard for me to follow because it was super quantitative, which is not quite how I'm geared. But you were comparing, actually, the sort of ability of social media data to how well does it synergize with polling? Or do you want to sort of unpack, like, what type of research were you doing there? And what were the sort of general impressions?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. And I'm sorry if I was not super clear. We had 10 minutes to get through a lot of data from the test. So what we did is we looked at all these different measures or several different measures of the ideology of news outlets. Because there's all this debate about selective exposure and polarization among media outlets and echo chambers and all those kinds of questions. And one of the fundamental elements of that is that you have to be able to say, well, this outlet is more conservative than liberal. This outlet over here is more liberal than conservative. And we wanted to look at the ways that scholars have looked at that. And then we had a few measures ourselves that also did that. So in a study we published about a year ago, we looked at some of the top sources, news sources, and how they treated the first 100 days of the Trump administration. And so to determine which sources were on each side, I guess, we looked not at the sources themselves, but what their audiences were. Mm. So we conducted surveys and we asked people if they got news from this list of about 20 sources, and if their audience was two-thirds more conservative than it is liberal, then we called that an outlet with a right-leaning audience. Mm.
That's interesting to look at, not actually the news reporting, but the audience as a way to gauge the ideology of the outlet. Is that?
Exactly, because there's a lot of assumptions going into that on both sides. So if you're looking at the actual reporting, in order to really get a sense of what their ideology is, it's very hard. you have to basically be in the newsroom when editorial decisions are made,
right.
Which no one can really do systematically across the hundreds of thousands of sources out there. But you can look at the content, and several studies do, and we have some studies that do as well. But when you're looking at content, you can't look at every news story that's published by an outlet. You tend to have to do some kind of sampling, which is fine. We know how to do random sampling and all that. But those are inherently going to be biased based on what is in the news at the time, who the authors are, all sorts of factors like that. Additionally, content analysis is really hard. I think computational work can be challenging sometimes, but making the decisions, especially around questions of, is the tone of this biased or not, you know, it can be very, very challenging, and you have to be very, very rigorous for it. So it's very tough to do well. And so there's not many studies that actually do that. In fact, a lot of the studies that try to determine the ideological orientation of news outlets try to use some kind of proxy. So they'll say, how many times did they cite Democratic or Republican legislators? Mm. Or do they use similar language to the language used by Democrats on the floor of the House versus Republicans using the floor of the House? So things like that. So we looked at all those different methods. We looked at those kinds of methods, those kinds of content-based methods. We looked at audience-based methods like the survey one I did. And we also looked at social media-based methods because that is another form of an audience. It's not the representative sample, but it's the people who, or the accounts, we don't necessarily know the people, who are sharing those sources on Twitter or Facebook or wherever. And we end up finding that there's actually a lot of alignment between, at least on this question, between them. We find that news outlets who are shared more by accounts that are more liberal or conservative tend to align pretty well with news outlets whose audience, according to survey measures, are more conservative and more liberal.
Tough to process.
Yeah, it's easier to visualize, unfortunately. And they also align with some of these content measures. But because these are so challenging, we end up only having being able only to compare on a few outlets across each site. So I think we have about 75 outlets that were used by at least two of the different kinds of sites that we were comparing.
Right.
So on some of them, we only had an N of 12 that we could actually compare. So it really gets difficult to be definitive about what that actually means. But it does speak to the overall tendency toward accuracy of these measures. And hopefully will help scholars as they're trying to answer some of these, the next order of questions about things like selective exposure and media effects more generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a super hot topic.
Yeah.
And so my last question for you has to deal with another hot topic, which is the 2018 U.S. midterms coming up. And you mentioned the trust, facts, and democracy research, but what other types of research is Pew doing in relation to the midterms? Because I imagine that it's a big event, so there must be a little bit of uptick in activity from your end.
Well, so I can't really speak to anything that we have planned or may do in the future. Plans change, and so we don't want to promise something that we may or may not end up doing. But I can talk about what we have done recently. And so we have some studies that have looked at approval of key figures, like approval of President Trump, approval of Congress going into the election. We've looked at voter attitudes. My team has looked, and myself personally, has released work looking at attitudes toward the media, towards the news media. And we actually have some pretty interesting results there, because there we show that there's enormous gaps between the parties and their attitudes toward media, from things like the watchdog role, which is whether or not the news media actually kind of keeps politicians in line. And there we see a 44-point gap between Democrats, who tend to think that that's a good thing, and Republicans who think that's not actually happening.
Apropos polarization, right?
Right, right. And that's one of those questions where you tend to see that the parties generally flip a little bit when a new president comes in, where whoever's party is in power, they tend to think, well, the media needs to back off a little bit, but this is greater than anything we've seen before. Mm. And it was actually really interesting because in 2016, members of the parties were pretty close on that question. 2017, this gap opened up, and it's the same this year, or practically the same this year. Mm. And we haven't seen anything as large as that gap since we started asking this question. We've been asking this question for decades. That's something going into the midterms. There's also gaps in other media attitude questions. You know, is the media biased toward one side? Is the news information from a trustworthy? Do they do a job keeping people informed? All of these have double-digit gaps between the parties. So that'll be interesting going into the midterms, since you know people need the news media to get information about the candidates and the issues that are important. So I'm excited to see what we come out with in the coming month or so, I guess 3 weeks, something like that. I don't know what all that will be.
Me neither, but I'm looking forward to following it. And with that, let's close it down. Dr.
Right.
Stocking, thanks so much for your time. This has been great.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's great to be on something that I listen to all the time.
Awesome.
I've just been speaking with Dr. Galen Stocking, computational social scientist at Pew Research Center. Click the episode description if you want to follow links to the studies that were talked about in this episode. And if you learned something, shoot it around on Twitter. That'll do it for this episode of the Social Media and Politics podcast. Thank you again for tuning in. Next week, we're going to be looking at a really cool initiative called Drog that uses video games to inoculate the public against disinformation. So stay tuned for that. And with that, I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.